Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion for this Monday, the 1st of July. Very nice to have you with us. And we welcome you to write your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the group to you, and then we will get started. It was a busy news week or a news weekend. Remember when Mondays just used to be boring? You used to look for stuff, and you couldn't find anything. Now there's this accumulation right there. Can you hear now? We're getting everybody set up in the studio. All right, we'll work on that. Good morning. Albany Law School Professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration Law Clinic, is here. Sarah, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Wonderful to have you. Corporate Attorney Rich Honan is back. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Very nice good. To have you here.
Nice
always
to be
a
here.
Pleasure. And Libby Post joins us, political consultant to the stars. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us as always.
It's very nice to be here.
All right. And WAMC's Alan Shartok, fresh from a Tanglewood run on Friday. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir. Pretty good.
All right. Well, we'll take that. And good to hear you in fine fiddle, at least on the radio. Let us go to what is happening in the world. And again, we welcome you to join us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We are just taking care of a brief technical issue, and
we're all good.
We're good.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we can try these too. But you have headphones.
Sure.
All right. Are yours working?
They formerly of Rich. Yes, they are.
All right. So why
so
don't
we
take,
have to see if Rich is.
This is really riveting.
This is
it,
great
Alan?
Radio. Just go
really
ahead.
Great radio.
Just go ahead.
Yeah, you try those.
Well. I think it's good. I think everybody's in on it. That's what makes WAMC very special. We're all together.
Yep. Okay. So I think we're better now. All right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Let us get started, and we'll. It's just so funny to see everybody putting their headphones on and trying to get
this
the
is your volume.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm good.
President Trump had a busy weekend. He was the first sitting president ever to set foot in North Korea. He met Kim Jong-un at the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea on Sunday and crossed briefly into North Korea, becoming the first sitting U.S. president to visit the isolated state. The two men held 53 minutes of private talks and agreed to set teams to, quote, work out some details to determine whether progress could be made in their negotiations over North Korea's nuclear program, according to the president. Speed is not the object. We want to see if we can do a really comprehensive good deal, Trump said after the talks. Nobody knows how things turn out, but certainly this was a great day. This was a very legendary, very historic day, said the president. It'll be even more historic if something comes up, something very important, he added. Very big stuff, pretty complicated, but not as complicated as people think. Well, nothing complicated about that answer either, is there? So that is where we are with that. Sarah, first of all, Alan, any thoughts on that? Because I think you may be the only person paying attention to me.
Well, no, I'm certainly paying attention to you, and I have my headphones on and my microphone in front of me. No, I think it's a disgrace. I can't wait to hear what Rich has to say on this. But I tell you, here's a guy who steps foot in there and basically gives it all up. He had said he wants the end of nuclear weapons, and now he's saying, okay, you can keep. Basically, what we're hearing, 30 or maybe, is that he's ready to let it go. In other words, whatever they want, they can have. Whatever they got, they can have. And meantime, he's calling probably the most brutal dictator in the world his good friend over and over again. We've seen this kind of thing before. We've seen it with Putin. But this time, we're seeing it with the North Korean terrible guy. And so from what I'm thinking is, his concept of the art of the deal is anything that works is okay, and it doesn't, nothing matters at all. That's where I am.
Was this scheduled? Does anyone know that? I did not know this was happening until it happened.
It was sort of leaked, Joe, that he might do it.
Yeah.
And I think there was a leaked. They leaked that he was going to visit the DMZ.
Right.
And then I think he kind of announced on Twitter that
he was going to go into North Korea.
Yeah, and you know, if you're there, I could drop in on you. It's kind of the thing. If you're going to be around,
I'll bring a salad.
So, Rich, as long as you got the microphone, why don't you tell us what you think of your president?
I'm very proud of my president. I think that who knows what, if anything, comes out of this. Maybe nothing. But, you know, I'll go with what you guys used to say when other administrations were talking to people in, you know, Iran and in Cuba, and that, you know, talking is better than not talking. I don't know what comes out of it. I actually think the bigger cultural problem is, you know, we all grew up in a capitalistic environment, whether we like it or not. So we understand that things have a value and that value changes. And I don't know that North Korea's leader understands that he might be at the apex of the value of his nuclear weapons program. It might be that this might be kind of their high water mark, and if he's going to basically sell, now might be the time to sell. You know, now he might be able to get the most sanctions relief. He might be able to get all sorts of things. But I just don't know if that's a concept that is inculcated in that kind of culture.
Well, you know, I think talking is better than not talking, but I think talking in coherent, complete sentences is even better. And once again, that's not what we got from this president. You know, it's like nobody knows who things are going to turn out. It was a great day. It's very legendary, very historic. Well, what about some specifics? What about some, do you have any idea on policy of what really could happen? You know, what about the parents of Otto Warmbier?
Right.
You know, what about his parents and how they must feel where this guy is playing buddy-buddy to the man who killed their son? So, you know, this is not my president. And, you know, I think that it's all show. It's like when you're driving along and you realize, oh, we're passing somebody's house. Let's go stop in.
Yeah. That's
but
like.
also, isn't it a matter of, so what does it mean? In other words,
nothing.
I have no sense of meaning here except that he has given up virtually every pre-announced principle that he's had.
But he can now say, I'm the first president who went to North Korea.
Exactly.
I did that.
It's bull in a china shop diplomacy.
Yeah.
He just does what he wants.
Or
he
BS.
Figures everybody else will figure it out.
Yes.
And he's just looking for a quick win or a participation trophy that he can put on his shelf in order to help his reelection chances.
Well, I think he's looking for a real win. I don't know that this gets him there. I think that if we end up having whatever you would call, I don't know what better relations with North Korea would be. I don't even know that I could necessarily define that.
This is the third meeting, though. What came out of the first two, and how is this different than that?
Well, I think, you know, the first was the first, right? The second was the one where Trump walked away and I think sent some messages to the other side that, you know.
Well, we don't know who walked away. In other words, he walked in there and there was absolutely no, apparently there was no willingness on the part of the North Koreans to give anything. And then he walked out. And it was regarded as a great defeat for Trump, by the way. And so
by
now,
you, maybe. I think.
Yes, by me. And I think by almost every political commentator I'm aware of.
Well, Kim Jong-un felt that he did so well that he ended up executing half the people who arranged the meeting. So I'm not sure that he thought it was a big win for him. But, you know, look, it again.
Sounds like a totally reasonable person. Yeah. Understands.
Let's be buddies with that guy.
But yeah. Market,
I mean, look.
What would you have us do? Would you have us just ignore? I mean, they have nuclear weapons.
There is a
they can deliver
between,
nuclear weapons. Would you have us ignore them?
No. There's a difference between diplomacy and then treating the guy like your best friend.
That's right.
All right. Well, that's his style. I know you don't like it. I don't always like it, but
whose style?
That's Trump's style.
Okay. I want to make sure we're talking which of the would-be dictators we're talking about.
Well, what I find interesting is
our dictator checklist.
Right. There was a high-ranking North Korean defector who told Richard Engel from NBC that Kim Jong-un loves President Trump because he's not, quote-unquote, moral, and that he doesn't judge.
Good point.
I think that that's exactly what we've got here. We have two vacuous individuals who have no moral center, no moral compass, and they will do what's ever good for themselves, and they're both narcissists. So,
and there's one other thing I think we should talk about here, and that's China. You will remember before any of this came down, there was a visit to between the two leaders, Xi and Kim Jong-un. So what, in fact, that meant may have something to do with the outcome that we're watching here. Seems to me the North Koreans have gotten everything that they wanted, right? Am I wrong about that? I mean, in other
words, what have they gotten? What have they gotten now?
You can keep your nuclear weapons. We're not going to move in on that. And we're going to live with it, and we're going to make you into a nuclear power.
From who? From us? From us or from the Chinese, you're saying?
No. I'm talking about us. I don't know what the Chinese... I don't know what the Chinese did. I suspect the Chinese have always been nervous about North Korea, because the last thing they want in terms of what they've got in this world right now is anybody upsetting the apple cart.
But the Chinese were the only ones that we thought for a very long time could keep them in line.
Yeah, and right. I think that was flawed thinking. I think that you're right. That was always the thinking. Let's try, and you know, Trump was very big on that. And you said, oh, let's get the Chinese to do this. I don't think the Chinese, A, I don't think they're particularly worried about the North Koreans. And B, I don't think it bothers the Chinese very much that, you know, we're fretting so much over the North Koreans. What does bother the Chinese is the, what do we have, 18,000, the troops that we have in South Korea, which they would prefer not to see. But I get the feeling if China really wanted to, you know, be tougher on North Korea's nuclear program, I think they have more weapons at their disposal.
Well, and I don't know if there is any diplomacy here or thinking aside from individual achievement from our the leader of our country. I wonder if he's trying to message to China, you know, I can do this on my own. I don't need you guys.
I know where you guys come from. You don't think there's any rhyme or reason, you know, so I understand that. You know, on my side,
we come from where?
The land of reason.
Yeah, right.
And
but you know, I on my side of the fence, you know, we believe there is some thought to this, and I think that the meeting that Alan alludes to, the meeting between the Chinese and the North Koreans, might have been one of the drivers that says, look, you know, they're not the only player in town, and you know, we're a player too, and you know, we can be part of this.
Here's the question. All right, on your side, because I'm deeply curious about this, and I don't believe in sides either, but let's just say the side of the aisle.
Right.
Are there other Republicans that you would rather have in that position? Because I can think of like 50.
I can't think of 50. Yeah, in the position as president?
Yes.
Okay, how about 20?
How about one?
Two.
I'm trying to think of one.
Because, you know,
really?
Just in terms of just you, diplomacy alone.
I'm not kidding. I mean,
okay, so let me just slightly rephrase the question, is there anyone that you believe that is in the Republican Party who is more qualified to hold that job than is currently holding it?
And walk into North Korea?
Condi Rice is the only one. She's the one that actually comes to mind.
So I would listen to what she has to say. I mean, I don't know if she's made any public statements about what happened this weekend, because she's very careful about what she says.
Yeah, that's not her. That's not her gig.
Well, she's smart.
Yeah,
she understands diplomacy. She's been in the seat for.
But she's not.
For
but she's
a long
not,
time.
But she's not in the mix. She's not in the.
Not anymore. Yet.
Right.
But
it still matters what she says.
Yes.
It's sort of like, you know, President Carter, you know, right, saying that this president was not legitimately elected.
So, Rich, just to back up for a minute, just to make sure I get your position, because I always like to know that when the president of the United States walks across the border, first guy to do that, and says, you can keep all your nuclear weapons, everything you got, that's the leak that we have, and we're going to consider that a victory, you're comfortable with that?
I don't think that's what happened. I wouldn't be comfortable with our position being that you can keep all your nuclear weapons forever, and you know, let's shake hands and call it a day. I would not be comfortable with that being our position. I don't think that is our position. If that was, I'd be disappointed.
Okay, just to back up for a second, and what is our position? Because, you know, every pundit I've watched on the television all night long and in the morning and everything else have said that's our position. So what is our position?
Our position is the same position, by the way, as other administrations have had when dealing with you know, other cultures and other dictators. We've always felt that if we could introduce some form of capitalism, not democracy, but some form of capitalism, we've always felt that that would be something that would give us more, you know, more weapons to be able to develop relationships, to trade. You know,
the problem with that, Rich, is some form of democracy without some form of capitalism without democracy usually leads to fascism.
Yeah, I understand. But that's what else do we have short of war? Short of military options.
He's already a fascist, so all it would do is make a very rich fascist.
I know, just in the minute we have left, I know I often take you to task for this. So,
sure,
but I'm gonna ask the question that I usually take you to task for, which is when I bring up something and you say, well, what if you know,
right.
President, what about when President Obama did this? But seriously, if President Obama went over to North Korea and went into North Korea, don't you think there would be a hullabaloo?
Oh my God.
On your side, if that happened?
Yeah, but if. If President Obama had gone into North Korea, all you would hear about is how historic it was, how far-seeking, how forward-looking, how first American president, and oh, isn't it appropriate that
he came out and said that the terms of the quote-unquote deal were the same?
Joe, of course the folks on our side would have taken shots at it. That's how it works, right? But
that's how it works?
Alan, you've said this all the time. You know, whoever happens to be in power takes shots at who isn't in power. We've pointed out the hypocrisy on both sides. Yeah, so yes, we would have found fault with it, but you would have seen an outpouring of, you know, give him another Nobel Prize, first president. Come on, you know that it would have been a lot different than the reception that this is getting now in the MSN.
But
it wouldn't have happened. Yeah.
And they wouldn't have given him a Nobel Prize because he already had one.
No, well, you can have two.
They give him two.
Still.
No,
all right.
No, but
we only have 20 seconds. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, no, I mean, you know,
you want to wait
I love the fact that Rich joins us. However, he's just dead wrong.
That's right up there with all due respect.
Yes.
With all due respect.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this. And won't that be fun? Paddle at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this 1st of July. Very nice to have you with us. We have a wonderful panel: Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Rich Honan, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters. We have a couple. Let's go to those, and we'll move on. Carol says, Rich, taking into account the quote-unquote trust-building aspect regarding North Korea, thus following the old treaties between the U.S. and the USSR, how do you square this with Trump's abrogation of the same kind of treaty with Iran, no trust-building there?
Yeah, because I think that I think it's a misnomer to call the agreement we had with Iran as an agreement or a treaty. One, it wasn't a treaty, but also in contract law, you learn for something to actually be an agreement, there's got to be obligations on both sides, right? And I'll defer to the smarter lawyers here. There were no obligations. There were very few obligations of Iran under that treaty, and it was a bad agreement. And we basically performed everything we had to perform on the first day. So I don't think it built any trust. And you could ask anybody who saw, you know, the movements of Hezbollah and what was going on in Syria and things like that. So no, I can square them very, very simply. That was not a trust building exercise. That was just a holdup that we gave away a lot of leverage.
Professor, what do you think?
I actually am not an expert on contract law, but I was.
As far as I'm concerned, you're our expert. But you're our professor.
We have so many in the room. What a blessing.
Oh, yeah.
So, but just from a diplomatic point of view, there are subtle but important differences in all of these different international arrangements. And it's important to pay attention to them. And flouting them or going outside of them rearranges the diplomatic landscape in important ways, not just for the United States and whatever country we're dealing with, be it Iran or North Korea or China, but the other allied countries that also depend on these agreements.
Mm,
and so
it's like
sort of taking the globe and shaking it up and trying to figure out where it's all going to sort out. And they're all conveniently, you know, there at the G20 summit, so they can all talk about it in real time. Even Ivanka,
maybe she can talk about it.
If
nobody
she can
wanted
get
to talk
the
to
club.
Her, yeah.
But which is also bizarre and upsets the diplomatic order by having a citizen, essentially, not an official cabinet member or representative of the State Department present for these types of conversations. It's like, what are they doing?
Well, you know, I used to be very involved in UN Club when I was in high school, Model UN. I love Model
UN. Me too.
I loved it. It was my favorite thing.
Show of hands, how many people are surprised by that? Okay, go ahead.
And it's like we had more diplomatic skill and knowledge of what was going on for our small part of the world back then, that for the country we were represented, than these guys do. It's really it's like diplomacy isn't something that they're really concerned about, because he thinks, as he said during the campaign, leave it to me, I'll take care of everything. And look how well he's doing. Rich, you can be the apologist all you want, but the fact of the matter is that we are in a much more. Off camera, I'm very nice.
You can do whatever he wants.
Right.
That's fair.
We are in a much more dangerous position now than we've ever been, with no country respecting our position in the world, no one being able to take what he says at face value, and the amount of time it's going to take for us to rebuild that trust once he's gone. We did it quickly with Bush, but this is like Bush to the 17th power, so maybe the 100th power.
At least.
Rich?
Mm-hmm. I think that we are in, first of all, it's always a dangerous time, right? And we could always legitimately say that it always seems to be a dangerous time. And I think it's because as the world gets smaller and weapons,
get bigger
and the people that we're fighting are no longer really countries. And, you can't tell who's the combatants. So it's always a dangerous time. I actually think our position in the world is stronger than it was 4 years ago. I know you guys disagree.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. but I think that
can't be allowed to pass. We've alienated every one of our major partners, Rich. We don't operate as a right. unit anymore. That is some statement.
How have we alienated all of our?
We
major...
kicked them all out of. We got out of all our mutual agreements. We got out of Paris. Remember that? We got out of Iran. Remember that? What are you talking about?
Yeah, but Iran. Look, Iran. We knew at the time Iran. Many of us said at the time Iran was a bad deal, and I understand that our partners, the French and the folks who wanted to use part of that $173 billion to sell things to Iran. I understand they were upset. And I know that we ruffled some feathers when we told people maybe you should come a little closer to making your NATO obligations, your 2% of GDP, which nobody's doing. We come the closest. But I think that the world is not... I don't think the world is always an unsafe place. I don't think the world is terribly less safe than it was before. And I think there's fewer globally displaced people than there were under the previous administration.
I mean, just in the United States, though, I mean, the incidence of hate crimes have spiked. That's a statistical fact.
Oh, absolutely.
So intra-country hate is on the rise. We also have massive issues with regard to migration and immigration and Trump's immigration policies, like destroying relationships that we have with other countries. There's the things that he's done with Venezuela, Iran, China, North Korea. Saudi Arabia. There's just not a country where our relations that isn't ruled by a dictator that our relations have improved with under this administration.
Well, I think first of all, I think our trade relations with both Canada and Mexico have improved.
Watermelons were about to be $15 this summer.
Talk to the farmers and ask them if things have gotten better, and they haven't. I mean, It's we are not safer than we were. Yes, the world's a different place, but you know what? I felt safer knowing that we had allies.
Guys,
now we don't.
Before, you forget about things. You forget how much territory, how much physical territory ISIS had back, you know, a year before Trump was elected.
That's not attributable to this administration.
Of course it is.
That's attributable to our military, which is actually operating outside of this administration to a certain degree.
No, that's exactly wrong. The difference that this administration made from the previous administration was this administration let our military go without having to get permission from lawyers back in Washington, and within a year, the ISIS. Now, I'm not saying that terrorism is reduced, but I'm saying the physical caliphate of ISIS was reduced in a year simply because of the changes in the rules of engagement and the ability to let the military do their job. And that was a direct result of this administration.
That's like Trump taking credit for the economy.
No. I mean, he should.
No, he shouldn't. Every economist will tell you that it was the product of 8 years of Obama's policies. And I think the same thing goes with ISIS.
It's Keynesian economics theory, which does take two to four years to be implemented.
Then why were all those Keynesians under Obama telling us that all those manufacturing jobs are gone? You're going to have to wave a magic wand. They're not going to come back. Why were they all telling us that less than 2% GDP growth was all we were ever going to see?
Why were they telling us that we
had to live with those levels of unemployment because that's what it was going to be under the new world?
Alan?
Wait. As long as we're in the why or what, isn't this the same president you've just said, lets the military go? Just lets the military go, except he fires their chiefs, right? Because they don't agree with him? Yeah. What's that about, Rich?
I think that's something he's allowed to do. I think our military is.
What do you mean he's allowed to do?
I think our military has done very well for us under this administration.
You said he lets them go. Then you say presidents are allowed to do that.
No, it's not inconsistent at all. What I said was, and by the way, he listened to the military leaders who said we can reduce the effect of the ISIS caliphate if you would let us not have to go back and get permission every time that we need to commence an operation. And it
God help us that the civilian control of the military
Are you really trying to argue that we did better fighting ISIS under the Obama administration than we did under the Trump administration? Are you really trying to argue that the administration under that first called them the JV team and then gave birth to this movement did a better job fighting them than now? It's just a bad argument. You should go on to something else. You have plenty of other things you could point to Trump, and one of them.
I'm glad you're telling me what I can argue and what I can't argue. However, I'm very much aware that he has fired his most important military people, the people that we thought were really great sources. And now you're saying it's okay that the military is allowed to go off on its own, if it is, by the way, and I don't know that it is, because, that's the way it is. I don't get it.
There are still rules of engagement. And under the Obama administration, what happened were more surgical attacks that involved less civilian deaths. And what we're, again, it's a bull in a china shop. And we better be very careful about the price that we pay and how we measure the loss of human lives. If ISIS remained in power in those territories versus the civilian casualties that were lost by wiping them out in that type of an aggressive manner. But the rules of engagement still apply. You can't violate those.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's arguing that they did.
So let's take a break. We'll let everybody let our panelists
calm down.
Let our panelists stop attacking Rich, and then we'll come back and we'll let the listeners attack Rich. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Rich Honan, and Libby Post on the panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, a couple more letters here, and then we'll move on to some other things. Matt says, Rich, this was all about a photo op. Trump pulled out of the Iran deal, and now Iran has violated the deal. Trump's style of foreign policy is incoherent. Come on, man, says Matt. Come on, man.
That was well said.
Maureen says, Rich defends the indefensible. His logic and thoughts are depressing. Sadly, this reasoning will prevail and help Trump get reelected.
Yeah, how do we get rational people like you to get off that team, man? We need you.
James says, I wish I had the ability to apply selective amnesia as Republicans do. I remember how Obama was excoriated for suggesting that he would even talk with North Korea and Cuba. Now that a Republican shakes hands with a brutal dictator, Trump is a genius. Todd says, will the Democrats running for president smarten up, use Trump's tactics and those of his moron offspring?
Wow.
Wow.
They're in parentheses, it says junior, by calling him a rapist, a bigot, a liar, a phony, bring up his bankrupt past, his failed casinos, play on his level. I guarantee he'll back down. He's really a coward. He's got to go. Mm-hmm. All right, more letters. Alan is right about Trump's attitude toward Kim Jong-un. Trump's language about love letters and such, embarrassing as it is unimportant. The result of all these meetings is what? Nothing has changed except that there has been a lot of publicity, something craved but by both parties. Why is North Korea preferable to Iran? At its most superficial, the difference is that one has a population being oppressed by clerics and the other a population being oppressed, starved, and killed by a megalomaniac. Maureen, in a letter simply with the subject line of Disturbia, I'm mightily disturbed by the normalization of Trump's brand of foreign affairs, quote-unquote, leadership. He relies on his personal, quote-unquote, friendships with world leaders, which tend to ebb and flow, except for admiration for cruel and lawless dictators. The media rarely calls him out on this lack of professionalism. I don't think that's true.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't it Dennis Rodman that introduced him to...
Yes.
That's the connection.
But I think the media the media has pointed that out.
I think the media has been all over this fact, but that's all right. In fact, he is operating right out of the autocrat's playbook, and his incompetence, immorality, and recklessness is chalked up to his quote-unquote style.
Joe, I wanted to go back to Lori's letter. Very good letter. It started Alan's right, but forget about that. Down in the first paragraph, we heard nothing has changed except that there has been a lot of publicity, something craved by both parties. Well, wait. Something has changed. I think that the change now, and I know Rich is not agreeing with this, is that we have agreed to let them be a nuclear power. That's a huge change, mm-hmm. something that he did not want to happen, something that is now happening.
I didn't see the statement where we said that you can keep your nuclear weapons forever. I don't know what you're referring to there.
I agree,
by the way, what's her name, Laura?
Yeah. Lori.
I agree with her that at the moment, nothing has changed. There's been a couple of photo ops, and there's been communication where previously there wasn't direct communication, but she's right. This could come to nothing. We could end up in a worse situation than we were before. It's possible.
Michael writes, great conversation as always. I've said it before. I want to say it again. I really respect Rich for coming on again and again. I may not agree with him, but his arguments are always thoughtful. He always does his research. We need to hear some conservative voices from time to time, lest we get locked in an echo chamber. Thank you, Rich. Jen says people would have praised Obama for North Korea talks because he had a track record of having a spine and morals in general. We wouldn't be feeling the urge to put our heads between our knees. We have no place in this world anymore, and that's fine because there will be no world soon enough. Oh, this is really...
Happy Monday.
Yeah. Thank you, Rich, for your vote. Heavy sarcasm. I love you, Libby.
Shut your ears, kids.
Yeah.
Say that again.
I love you, Libby.
Thank you.
Yes. You are my spirit voice, is what it says. You're my spirit voice. Betsy says, Rich's idea of American diplomacy seems to be, in a nutshell, the world is a dangerous place, so let Trump do whatever he wants. No reasonable person would agree with this. One step closer to nuclear war is one step closer to nuclear war, period. And whatever happened to America first? This is completely a win for North Korea, not the United States. Have a nice day.
Agree, yeah. But is that an oversimplification of your point?
I was going to
say what I heard.
Yeah, no. I think that is an oversimplification. I think that there's a couple of things that people have problems with besides everything else with Trump, and one of them is his desire to do bilateral agreements and not these big multilateral agreements. And I think if it was anyone other than Trump, if it was any of the 50 Republicans, for example, that you were making reference to, we'd be having a serious discussion about the benefits of multilateralism versus bilateralism, and whether, you know, in a globalized world, whether, you know, you can actually do multilateral deals because of all the differing
That might be true, but we've been needs. Doing those types of we've been having those conversations since the new millennia because right. of the European Union and the experiment of Charlemagne and the European Constitution.
We've been
which
doing
failed.
This since the end
yeah.
of World War II.
And the European Union.
I mean, let's
That's
be
fair.
Real.
Right.
Let's be real about this. This has been our model since the end of World War II. That's why NATO was established. That's why we were able to negotiate various good things and bad things. It's how we got into Vietnam.
And,
it's how we, you know, but that's the way it is.
Well, on the military.
And that's why Churchill lost his empire.
Right.
In other words, that was just
right.
part of it.
Right.
I'd say I don't disagree that that's what we've been doing. I think it's had mixed success. I think that first of all, things change. And I really think with an increasingly, I hate the word, but with the increasingly globalized world. Which
well,
is
no,
basically
but
saying,
I think it's interesting that we have conservatives pushing against globalization, especially capitalist conservatives, because globalization has... That's usually under attack by leftists.
To push against globalization is to push is like it's a natural thing, right? I mean, you can't say I'm against it is. It's here.
It's the populist response, which is a right-wing response,
a bilateral response.
Well, no, I don't know. Do you think it's right-wing to say that?
Look what's happening in Europe and some of the more, you know, Turkey and what's happening
well,
here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there these populist responses and takeovers of some governments, it's all right-wing, and they want to retreat. They don't want to be on the world stage. They want to keep their borders strong, keep their nationalism the way it is, that, you know, whoever, Germans, only Germans in Germany, only Italians, and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Brazil.
And right, and Brazil, no gays, which, and they just, you know, too bad.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Yeah, right. You know, so, to say that, it's not a conservative, that globalism is part of a conservative response, I just think is disingenuous.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying globalism is a fact of life, and it's how you deal with it. You're right, some of those have been the responses. I would suggest that some of the, and I'm not saying I'm supportive of those responses, but I think some of those are in response to the idea that you know, places where there was unchecked yeah. migration, for example, and unchecked immigration. You'll see that the European Union nations, you know, did put some significant, you know, kind of governors on that. And dealing, by the way, with far lower levels than we were, even mm-hmm. proportionate mm-hmm. to population, I think that's part of it. And I think it's just there's so many competing interests now that if you're going to do a deal with 10 different people, 10 different countries, 10 different companies, 10 different anything, it's going to be really hard to do a deal that at the same time isn't good and bad for everybody. That's why bilateral is a way of responding to it.
I want my minute. My minute says, in less than a minute, Rich, how in the world can you be for and backing a president of the United States who would take our Constitution, wreck it, potentially take people's civil liberties away from them again and again and again? And you know, when the Congress of the United States isn't allowed to do its thing in overseeing the president, that we are in line for a dictatorship. I can't get that through my head.
Well, I wouldn't be in favor of a president who I thought was ripping up
the Constitution. You don't think this guy is?
I do not.
This guy who will not send his people to Capitol Hill, who will not defend himself?
You know, Rich, yeah. I would suggest you read a book entitled Truth in Our Times by a guy named McGraw, who is this deputy chief counsel of
and
of
an
the
Albany
New York
Law
Times.
Alum.
And he was and
oh,
he
really?
Was at
yeah.
Albany Law. I'm just finishing reading the book. And you will find how he is shredding the First Amendment, especially when it comes to freedom of press.
I haven't read the book, not familiar with it.
You'll love it.
Yeah, it's great.
You
oh,
actually,
it's really great.
You will.
Listen, whenever I'm told that Barbara Smith used to do the same thing, she used to give me a book and I would read. So I will read the book and I will come back and be able to respond then.
Okay.
I like what Joe
what
said.
All
right, let's think. go ahead.
No, I'm going to Charlottesville, but we can talk about that when we come back.
Okay, great. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Can you hear me? Okay, there we go. I got an email.
I can hear you.
Okay, good. I didn't. I couldn't hear me, but now I can. I got an email that said, "Boy, during the breaks, it must be tense." And it was far from it. That was not tense at all.
We were
talking. We were singing, dancing.
We were having a good time.
Right. This is how America should be.
That's right. Not tense at all.
We go after each other on the radio, and then
that's right.
We're very friendly. Like,
it's important that people know that. Even when we have a passionate discussion,
it's like playing hockey.
It's very friendly. Yes.
Hockey. You beat the guy with a stick, and then you walk off with your arm around the guy.
Ralph.
Well, it's like politics.
Or Ralph, Wolf, and Sam Sheepdog. Remember that cartoon? They would go, they check in, time clock. So
Libby, it's like politics kind of used to be, right? I mean, maybe, but in the old, LBJ, Tip O'Neill.
Well, when there was bipartisanship,
right.
Yes. Absolutely.
And mostly men.
Yeah,
right.
That's true. Yeah. And that's a problem.
Right.
But
White men.
All right, let's go to some letters. Tristan says, good morning, everyone. The defeat of ISIS started under Obama. The only thing Trump did different was give the okay for Assad to stay in power and for Russia to play a bigger role in Syria. The coalition of American Special Forces, air support, Kurdish fighters, and Iraqi units was just a continuation of what was already in place. Ask Rich to explain what Trump has done different.
No, I think what Trump did, and you can go two ways on it. I think what Trump did was when he came in, he recognized that we had effectively lost in Syria by then. Meaning, I think the Russians were ensconced, Assad was going to be ensconced, the Iranians now had a bigger presence, and that was not a battle, we were going to win. Now, whether that was Obama's fault first or whether that was just the way it was going to go, to me, is unclear. I know I like to, take shots at Obama. I don't know that anybody could have fixed that situation.
I think we should when we can.
Yeah. But I think what Trump did was recognize a situation that was what it was and did something to mitigate it. But, basically said, we lost here. It's time to move on. Which you could take issue with. I'm just saying, I think that was the thinking.
Nicholas writes, Rich has a point in that many members of the panel seem to be unable to see any positives in actions taken by Trump. On the other hand, Rich also seems to be selectively ignoring certain aspects of the president's behavior and attitude that have measurably reduced our standing in the international community. A balance between the two attitudes is necessary for dialogue.
I've said a million, if you think Trump's behavior bothers and annoys you, how do you think it affects his supporters, right? I mean, how do you think it affects the people who say, boy, there's some things we think you do really right,
they
and then
love
there's some
him.
Things
it doesn't bother what? Them enough to
nuts?
Call for him to,
that's
to
true.
Resign.
It doesn't,
yeah.
Not that much.
I mean, but they love the racism. They love the misogyny.
Well, let's take that aside and just talk about, let's say, Republican senators.
Well, they love him because they're getting the policy initiatives that they want. It's not that they want him to be president as much as they're attacking choice, they're attacking gay rights, they're taking over the courts.
No, but I think
that's what they want.
But I agree. I think that what Rich says is absolutely right, though, that if you think it makes you uncomfortable of what he is saying, it has to make them uncomfortable, too. It doesn't make their job any easier.
Yeah,
I want to get my violin out.
Yeah, right. The really little one. No, really, really little one.
No, I'm not asking for sympathy on it. I'm just saying.
Let's play Hearts and Flowers.
But yeah, I'm not. You know, if the
it's
Republicans
not something
were
we
that,
all, we
I'm
don't
sorry.
Recognize.
If the Republicans were that upset, let them find their backbone and actually speak out.
A lot of them were that upset. That's why they got nothing done in the first Republican
only
Congress.
Only one. Representative Amash in Michigan, who I looked up to see how he's doing recently.
They got relatively nothing done where they controlled both houses of Congress and the White House.
Absolutely.
What does that say about their inability to govern?
That Congress was a disaster. I think the Senate actually did get some things done, but that Congress, I forget the number, but the Congress that got voted out in the midterm elections, they were a disaster. Absolutely. And they deserve to lose their jobs, and they deserve to lose their majority.
May I just point out, Rich, for whatever it's worth, we keep the the CNN screen up all the time, and I know you guys do it there too.
Yep.
And there's a thing, U.S. may settle for nuclear freeze by North Korea. Remember when you asked me how I knew that?
Yeah, so you left out the three most important letters there, though. That's according to the New York Times.
Oh, you mean really?
May. Yes,
okay.
Right.
Oh,
really?
No.
Oh, come on.
No.
You're going to attack the veracity of the New York Times?
Absolutely. The New York Times is not even, the New York Times is not a journalistic It's not a journalistic organization anymore.
I thought what Rich was going to say was not New York Times being the three letters. I thought it was May, M-A-Y.
Yeah, May sell. Right. I agree. Yeah. All right. Well, let's do three more letters, and then we'll move on to other subjects. And it just seems like time.
Nice transition.
Ellen says, Rich, it's not hard to figure out. Trump has already stated that Korea is a perfect place for a luxury hotel. Trump is setting himself up for a fabulous deal with Kim for a Trump property once he leaves office. Julius, so Rich, where are all the jobs coming? When are all the jobs coming back? Apple is closing out their Mac Pro manufacturing in the U.S. and moving it to China. Where is your evidence?
There's at least a million. I've heard numbers between 1 million and 6 million unfilled job positions in the United States right now.
And yet immigrants are trying to take all of them?
And yet people have to work three jobs in order to pay rent?
I think that is less true than it was under the previous administration.
No,
I don't think anybody's saying that the immigrants are trying to take all the jobs. I think the people on my side are just...
That's exactly what they're saying.
No,
that's exactly what they're saying, Rich. That's why they want them out of the country.
They're bad for our economy.
They're bad for the economy. They're taking our jobs.
They want them to come into the country legally, be processed legally, and then once here, take those jobs.
Seeking asylum at the border is a lawful way to enter this country.
Yes, and for the people who legitimately need and deserve asylum, that's what needs to happen.
And who's to make that judgment, Rich?
Well, we have to make the judgment.
When people are living in fear of their lives from gangs and drug dealers in El Salvador and in Honduras, who's to make that judgment? Who are we to say you don't deserve a better life in the United States?
Well, that,
I mean, what about our grandparents?
That's
Rich.
But that's
what
our
about
role.
Our grandparents?
Our grandparents
came
illegally.
No, in the 1920s, before we had any immigration laws, which didn't even hit until, besides the Chinese Exclusion Act and other types of statutes specifically designed to exclude people from the country, we had no immigration laws until 1950s.
And a huge mass of them came in through Ellis Island, where they were processed, and many of them were either sent back or delayed, and they came here and comported with the laws. Now, if the laws at the time were different, fine, but such laws as we had, they complied with.
And so you're saying that everyone who wants to come in now won't? Because I don't think that's true.
Well,
I think they do comport with the laws.
As a matter of law, the ones who come in illegally already haven't complied, okay? And we're still willing to work with them, and we're still willing to try and process asylum applications. But Libby,
that's not true.
The line is 900,000 people long at the moment. Right?
The law sucks.
Well,
it's
okay.
A terrible law.
We all agree on
that. It's worse than the tax code.
We all agree. Well,
and it is.
We all agree on that.
And Congress is to blame for that.
And we
almost had a deal under the Obama administration. Republicans killed it. And now they have to deal with the consequences, and they're not dealing with it very well. In fact, it's inhumane, and we're being held accountable by international law standards by what's going on. But I will say, while we're talking about immigration, and I really hate to move off that subject because I would love to annihilate this conversation, but I looked up manufacturing jobs in the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they have been on the rise, it seems, since 2010.
Well, of course, because they were at nothing. They were at nothing starting with in 2008. Of course, they've been on the rise.
All right. So let's get to some other stuff. I want to talk a little bit about the campaign. We touched on Friday during our Tanglewood broadcast about the Thursday debate, but I do want to get to two aspects of it. One is Joe Biden and the new attacks that are coming his way. in regards to his positions on racial issues. Former Vice President Joe Biden faced a fourth day of criticism Sunday over his long-held opposition to busing black children to majority white schools to desegregate them, highlighting the difficulty this, his campaign has had moving beyond an issue that erupted during Thursday's debate. Senator Cory Booker called out Biden on Meet the Press on Sunday, saying he has failed at bringing people together on racial issues because he won't speak candidly about past legislative work, such as his support for anti-busing legislation and work on the 1994 crime bill, which contributed to mass incarceration. He's causing a lot of frustration and even pain with his words, Booker said. When it comes to a difficult issue with race, if you can't talk openly and honestly about your own development on these issues, I think it's very hard to lead our country forward. Race has become a major flashpoint of the Democratic presidential campaign, and Biden's repeated stumbles raise questions about whether he'll be able to pivot from a messy discussion of his lengthy record to a positive message about how he would govern. Alan.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm very taken with Senator Harris. I think she's great. I know that I have been supportive of a Biden candidacy, but I could easily live with Harris. I am interested in the fact that Biden's numbers haven't really moved. What do you think of that?
They will move, and I think they'll move quickly. And my friend Cory Booker is exactly spot on. And this isn't about whether or not we can live with Kamala. This is about what, you know, Joe Biden's had this record, and we all should have known it. And people who supported him should have known it. And it's he's not handling it well.
Fair enough. But it hasn't moved yet. They haven't moved yet. What do you make of that?
It just happened. The debate happened last week.
It's so early.
But I will say,
Alan calls, what do you call them? Quick and dirty polls? Is that what you call them, Alan?
Down
and dirty? His approval actually rose after the first debate. That is true.
I don't trust those quick and dirty polls because they usually turn out to be something other than
Don't bother me with the polls.
No, because not with polls that happen within the 48 hours. I'm interested in the long game. And
no, I understand.
It's important to race in America should have a moment. And if we're going to move forward in this moment, we cannot have Biden as our president. We just had the white supremacist who killed Heather Heyer, who injured others in Charlottesville, who was sentenced to life in prison, I think it was last Friday.
Yeah.
We heard nothing from this president. What about bad guys on both sides? You know, I don't see other convictions coming out of this. There was a bad guy who killed another American, and there are more bad guys lining up behind him to do it. And they want to kill women of color, trans women of color, mm-hmm. anyone of color, immigrants. This is a serious issue.
Are you saying Biden is that person?
No. Nobody is.
Cory
isn't.
Important.
Kamala isn't. But you can't have leadership that says, well, you know, I used to support policies that kept minorities subservient place in our society. And I'm just not I'm just going to stand by them.
So how come Biden's numbers, whether you like the polls or not, are at least sustainable and Booker's, who you very much admire, go down?
Because, well, I'll tell you, I watched the local news. I won't say which station after the debates were over. Rarely watch. We have an antenna because I usually stream my television. I like my bubble. And I watched the local news afterwards. And the headline after that second night was Sanders and Biden face off. That wasn't the story. 10 minutes into the debate.
So you think it's a phony media?
I don't think it's a phony media. I think it's a mistake in coverage.
It sure seems, and I'm the furthest thing from an expert here and on this one, but it sure seems like it's real early in the after that debate to start trying to figure out what the effects were. And the other thing is,
except that this is the end of a fundraising quarter, and we just saw a headline that Buttigieg, what,
25 million?
Yeah.
25
yeah.
million. And I mean, once the numbers start rolling out for Booker and Harris.
And Harris, yeah.
And even Castro, I think that money will tell the story more than these, like, 48
apples. Well, Harris is doing much better. Yeah, no question.
I think they could, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I think that, I think that's in support of Sarah's argument that the Biden numbers are going to start slipping and you can't tell that right away.
But we have to believe in this country that somebody other than a white man is electable.
We know that because we just had a black president.
One out of 40.
Well, but it was a major move on the part of this country, wasn't it?
So we can't go back. I'm just saying that, like, a lot of this Biden talk is just a default to electability, what looks presidential, and it's racially based.
But the most important thing is, regardless of all of this, is that we have to vote Trump out of office in 2020. That's the most important thing.
But doesn't a Kamala Harris do that for you?
Kamala Harris probably would.
Kamala Harris.
You know, a Harris Buttigieg ticket would be tremendous. You know, but and we can all, you know, sit here and wring our hands about Joe Biden and Bernie and all the rest of them. But we have to all be clear that what's the most important thing here is saving the democracy, which means getting Trump out of office.
I could not agree with Libby more, not at the
expense of creating a vision for America moving forward that we can all get behind. I mean, they both have to happen.
Fair enough. So my question to you then, Professor, would be if Biden is the candidate and if Libby's clarion call to get rid of Trump is so, based on what you just said, not if, would you vote for Biden?
Of course.
Okay. That's all I got to hear.
But isn't also what you're saying is part of the, and I could be way out on a limb on this, but I thought part of the appeal of Biden was, besides the fact that everybody knows who he is, that he was initially presented as somebody who, you know, has the name recognition and everything to defeat Trump. Like, that was one of his big selling points.
A calming influence.
Right. And now it's starting to become, I don't know, some of these things are making it somewhat less clear whether he is the best candidate on the Democratic side to defeat Trump.
Which is what this process is supposed to reveal. Right. So, you know, I mean,
this is all very early. I mean, it is really very, very early in the process. There are, 20 of them? It needs to shake out. We need to see who's really going to end
actually,
up being
but go ahead.
27.
Well, you just had 20 in the debate.
And we just need to wait for this process to shake out and for people to drop off and see who's going to be the final 4 to 5.
Yeah.
And then we can really have some arguments.
But we don't do that. We don't wait. In this country, we don't wait.
Well, in the meantime, we can hold people with records accountable for them.
Yeah,
I mean, that's part of the process.
And thank you for calling on me, Joe.
It didn't work, but I tried anyway.
But I do think that as a supporter of Joe Biden, and as a guy who was very much admiring of his vice presidency to the first black president of the United States, who was beloved by him and vice versa, I got to say, I think Biden really has to pick up his game.
Yes, he does.
In other words, right now, I wouldn't want to see him up against Trump on that stage.
Nope.
So the other part of this, and we only have 2 minutes, I feel like I'm not even giving the story the time that it needs, but and then there's also the Kamala Harris birtherism question that came out over the weekend.
Can I ask, I don't want to take you out of, all right, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna, because I have the benefit of having the experts here. Do you think the effect, what if anything is the effect of the Democratic candidates who happen to be senators not voting in favor, either not voting or not voting in favor of the latest border support bill, the 4 points.
It's awful. I mean, I'm so angry I can barely talk about it.
Is that okay? Yeah. So let me ask you one other thing.
It's significant.
Do you give Cory Booker more credit for voting against versus the other ones who just didn't vote at all?
Yes.
Yeah, that's okay. That's how I would have looked at it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
From that end. But you think that'll come back to hurt anybody?
No, But I am relieved to see immigration on the main stage, because a week ago it was a question, 2 weeks ago it was a question about whether or not immigration would even be discussed.
Yeah. Well, how do you not, though?
The other issue that really came to the fore was transgender rights. Yep. I mean, it was really out there, and I have to give Booker all the credit for it, because he really brought it forth.
All right, we're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan Shartok, Sarah Rogerson, Rich Honan, and Libby Post. My thanks to all of you. We'll be back after this short break.